Welcome to the Language of Yoga. I'm Becca Schmidt. Today we're diving into how to theme a yoga class. We've talked a little bit about how to fine-tune some of the language in our previous two episodes. So today we're going to talk about one of the yamas, ahimsa. Ahimsa is the first of the yamas within the Eightfold Path of Yoga. Ahimsa translates most directly into English into no harm, nonviolence. So ahimsa encompasses not only how we treat others, animals, our environment, but also how we treat ourselves. And we don't always put it in that context. We think of nonviolence of, you know, don't hit other people or don't yell, things like that. But it's also how we take our practice, the language we use to ourselves in the mirror, right? If we have hateful language to ourselves, we're not practicing ahimsa. And that is the first ethical principle of yoga. So if you want to be a yogi, you've got to start saying nice things to yourself. All right, so that's where we begin today. As we learn more about the yamas and niyamas, those are the two first chunks of the Eightfold Path of yoga, we become more aware, and not only of the external behaviors, but the innate and learned behaviors of ourselves, right? Kind of our character. So when you have a regular yoga practice, you use the yamas, and there are many of them. There are those that deal not only with nonviolence, but non-stealing and some of the other ethical practices. And then we get into ethical practices deep within yourself. Those are the niyamas. So with ahimsa, you might think of other things that are just a pure nonviolence. A lot of yogis are vegetarians, they're vegans, and that's because non-harming is such a core principle to them. And when we eat animal products, certainly if an animal is killed, but also some of the other ancillary animal products do cause great harm to animals. So that's one way we can practice that very important first ethical traditional Sanskrit interpretation of ahimsa. So we come now to 2024 and beyond. Ahimsa is also compassion, it's kindness, and it's even courage, standing on your own ground, not being embarrassed to be the one vegetarian in the room, right? Just being more bold in the way you practice nonviolence. My twin sister is vegan and she does not even participate with leather. She won't wear a leather shoe. She won't carry a leather bag. So she practices this sense of ahimsa much farther than a lot of people do, right? So I have one of my favorite stories and a favorite examples of ahimsa, nonviolence, is from when I taught at the YMCA years ago. So we were in seated meditation. I had just started the class, and all of a sudden I noticed there's a pretty big disruption in class. People were grabbing their towels and jumping up, and there was commotion, and it was a spider. It was a spider walking among people's mats, and a couple of people had grabbed their shoe, and they're ready to smash this spider and ready to do something very harmful to this creature. And I said, who would like to practice ahimsa here in its truest form? Who would like to pick that spider up, living, and take it outside? And one guy said, oh, heck yeah, I'll do that. I'll pick up the spider. And it was such a great opportunity to teach this very important primary concept of yoga with nonviolence. And people saw it. And I think a lot of people will remember now what ahimsa was because they saw it in action. And everybody cheered for the guy and cheered for the spider. So it was a good experience there. So as a yoga teacher, you have a myriad ways of teaching from a seat of ahimsa. I like to think about some of the poses that allow us to showcase nonviolence. All right. So some of those poses are going to be poses where there's a lot of stillness in the body, right? That you're not uncomfortable approaching hurting your body in any way. So a couple of them that came to mind, mountain pose, where you just are standing there and using your higher chakra energy to breathe and to be composed and be still within the heart and the brain. That is a very nonviolent pose. You're not over-efforting. You're not trying to achieve anything. Mountain pose is a really good one to start a class with a theme or concept of ahimsa. Another one is child's pose. And I want to say that it might be a supported child pose because not everybody is comfortable in child's pose, right? So if you are teaching ahimsa or just trying to come into a place where everybody is in the same pose, but in a very relaxed essence, make sure that you're supporting those people who might have extremely tight hips or a knee injury or an ankle injury. Make sure that they can come into child's pose without pain. Because once you are in pain, you're no longer practicing ahimsa, that non-harm, right? Swaying palm, where you stand, you start in mountain pose and you allow both arms to come up in the air and then you do a gentle side stretch on one side and then the other. That's attainable for most bodies. That should not hurt. And then if you have somebody who might have a shoulder injury, then you help them do the pose without harming themselves. If my theme of my class is ahimsa, I like to start it out with enough poses where people recognize that place of non-harm or non-pain for themselves. So they can sit deeply into that essence of comfort, right? Of non-harm. So then from, let's say, mountain pose, you can lead them into more poses that start in that place of non-pain, non-violence, non-harm, right? And then you ask them to slowly move into the next phase of that with this mental acuity of staying out of pain, right? And a perfect example is bringing your students from mountain to tree pose. And you can do tree pose so many different ways. So as an instructor, you want to demonstrate these are the 3 or 5 variations of tree where it still feels attainable, right? In some yoga practices, the instructor or just the pictures, that the way that we think tree should look is very often the foot that's lifted, the leg that's lifted, that foot is right at the inner thigh. Most people cannot do that as beginner students, right? So they need options. If they put their leg on the inner thigh, if they try to achieve that pose, it's going to be uncomfortable, but they might fall. They might hurt their back and then they may sit through that pain, right? Because they don't know that the pose shouldn't hurt. No yoga should ever hurt. Never, ever. Our fundamental principle is non-harm. So we don't want your pose to hurt or feel so uncomfortable or fearful that, oh, I'm standing on one leg. I wish this pose was over, right? A yoga instructor wants the opposite. They want a person to be able to feel and be very aware of the comfort of the pose, right? So then the next time they do a pose like tree, maybe they change it up and they go to their edge. They go to their physical edge, which also takes them to their emotional and mental edge, and they feel successful, right? You just start incrementally. You might start with just lifting your foot. And then you lift your foot a little bit higher and then you anchor it on your calf and then you anchor it just above your knee So you're feeling that slow incremental building of a pose, and then your body gets used to that. They know that they can like that pose, right? Same thing goes, I'm just using mountain pose because it's a pose that most of us can imagine very well. Let's say we take that same pose in the spirit of ahimsa. We go from mountain pose to warrior one, right? Warrior one seems ubiquitous. Oh, it shouldn't hurt, right? But for some people, it does hurt, right? If you have an ankle injury or really stiff hips or something going on with your knee, the leg that is toward the back of the mat might be bothering you, right? So we take that pose in increments and continue reminding the student, this shouldn't hurt, right? If you feel extreme discomfort, let's adjust. And that's the role of a good yoga instructor is to, one, recognize if somebody's in pain or very uncomfortable. You can see it in their face. You can just see it in where they hold their energy in their body, right? And then you help them. Maybe the pose doesn't look exactly like Warrior One, and that is absolutely okay. That's a misconception, I think, that yoga students certainly have it. Even some yoga teachers will try to force the look of the pose rather than the intention of the pose. Okay. So the intention of the pose, first and foremost, is to cause no harm. Okay. So other poses that might come from that initial mountain pose where you move gently into bigger and bigger poses without hurting yourself might be a pose like eagle pose. Usually, if you look at like a picture of eagle pose in a book or yoga journal or something or online, you'll see the practitioner binding their arms. So their arms are all wrapped up. Their elbows are stacked. Their forearms bound. Their fingertips are up in the air. But not everyone can do that. So you want to offer them alternatives. So eagle pose can still look as beautiful. It can feel as powerful and as exciting if the yoga student or practitioner has their hands in prayer pose, right? There's no reason to do that bind. Binds can be very advanced and very uncomfortable. So find other ways for this pose to happen without the pain, okay? And also fierce pose is, a lot of people call it chair pose. It's the same pose. Again, oftentimes fierce pose or chair pose has arms straight up in the air. And that's the apex of that pose. As you send your tailbone back and you really fire up your thighs. But you have to think about the joints here. You think about your knee joint, your shoulder joint for sure, your hip joint. Even your ankle joints, right? They all get stressed in this pose, right? So I have seen so often people struggling and pushing and sweating and trying to look like this pose, but they're not feeling it because they're too deep into it, right? So that's a pose that we want to go into with strategy for sure. But also this sense of nonviolence, right? And you can get deeper and deeper into any poses as long as you give your body an opportunity to acclimate. Okay, so I think that's a really big thing that we need to realize when we're moving our students to their edge and then beyond the edge. We as yoga teachers should not be anxious on behalf of our students to get them deeper and deeper. Some styles of yoga push a lot harder, but we have to practice ahimsa on behalf of our students, right? Sometimes we say, oh, let's slow it down without embarrassing them or dumbing anything down. You just give them options. So ahimsa can really be done beautifully in a yoga practice in certain styles of yoga. Yin yoga, where everything is slow and deep. And even yin yoga, we sometimes want to push our body too deep into a pose too fast. So we need to learn how to take our time and practice non-harm at literally every single breath, reinforce that we're moving into our edge, but we're doing it in a non-harmful way. Ahimsa with a yin or a restorative class. Ahimsa can also be a really great theme for a workshop. And there you can get a little bit more broad in what ahimsa means, maybe off the mat, right? And you might practice things that are specifically nonviolent on a very personal level. If you do a workshop, especially if it's maybe a retreat or something, encourage your students to journal and really take that really close-up look. Did I practice my yoga experience with a sense of non-harming and non-violence? And then what happens off the mat? Do I go home and do I criticize myself in the mirror? Do I self-harm in any way? So workshops and retreats can be a really impactful way to reach your students in the rest of their lives, right? The other parts of their lives. Ahimsa is really good for people who have experienced trauma. A lot of teachers these days, and I am so excited about this, so many teachers are taking trauma-informed yoga teacher training. So they know the right words, they know the right poses, they know how to coach one-on-one or even in smaller group settings or even in larger classes where they're very aware of some past experiences or past harm and triggers for their students. So that's a really good reason to teach a whole class on non-harm or ahimsa. Yoga for new moms. I had a baby 20 years ago, but I do remember a lot of pressure. Moms who have just had a baby, there are a lot of pressure points, whether it's getting your body back where it should be, the stresses, the lack of sleep, just the pressure to be a perfect mom, right? So to practice ahimsa as part of a postnatal class, but also even in a prenatal class where your body is changing so much, you have some the inner dialogue sometimes that can be very critical. Okay, so those are two other sort of audience groups that this concept of ahimsa might be really important. Therapeutic yoga for sure, because therapeutic yoga is often used for people with chronic pain, chronic injuries. So you want to acknowledge maybe they're already in pain, right? So not to push them into more pain, but talk to them about just the pacing that we want to approach a yoga practice. It should remain non-painful. You want to be aware of what poses might trigger some trauma. One of them might be happy baby pose. Downward facing dog can trigger perhaps some past trauma for people. So just being aware of that and being the responsible person at the front mat, even Shavasana, where somebody is lying down at the end of class in meditation, some people prefer to keep their eyes open. And a lot of times a teacher, myself included, I might say, why aren't they trusting this space? Why don't they want to close their eyes? And then I have to really look into, they don't feel comfortable with that. And discomfort is a type of pain. So if they're very uncomfortable or have a lack of trust to lie down for 5 minutes with their eyes closed, I need to embrace that. And I need to give them the space to do what is non-harmful for them. Okay, so we can see how it has a lot of dimensions, right? So the yoga teacher, it's not just, are you going to hurt your injured knee? But it's so much more than that, so many layers. So I jotted down just a couple of yoga cueing, some words that go along with this non-harming philosophy. I'm one who likes to jot down a bunch of verbs, a bunch of expressions, a handful of ways to convey the theme. And we'll get more into that in future episodes, the actual words themselves. So I'm just going to read off a couple of them that I may use in a class where I'm trying to convey this extreme ease in the body. Okay. So I may say, on your next breath out, begin to release the energy of your hands. Relax your elbows, your shoulders. Soften your breath. Notice the tension in your body and begin to release it breath by breath. Find peace in your next breath. Find a sensation of floating and flowing. So that might be where I would do some guided meditation in Shavasana. And then during class, I will use a lot of words like release, flow, give, bring in softness, things like that. And I like to cue a lot of exhaling because exhaling is a way of talking to the body that things are okay, right? We take a nice, long, slow exhale. And we know that on that exhale, we can soften all the muscles in the body. And then sometimes I go into a little bit more esoteric stuff in the head. Imagine your brain relaxed. Allow your heart to slow. And it may not be that the heart is actually slowing, but we're visualizing that as coming into our consciousness, this slowing down and this not rushing around. And then if somebody, let's say it's a pose that maybe it's a low lunge or something, I talk about explore your edge, but resist going past that edge. And this might be really appropriate for a yin or restorative class where, especially in a heated room, sometimes these hot classes where you hold a pose for a very long time, you can get very deep into the pose, but is it safe? Is it good for you? I encourage people to not go past that physical comfort. Stay in that comfort zone. An expression I use all the time is to my students, I tell them, I even ask rhetorically, I say, who's the best teacher in the room? And they're looking around, oh, does she want us to say you are the best teacher? And I always say, you are your own best teacher. Because I, as the teacher, I have no way of knowing how your knee feels or knowing that you have maybe a broken toe that you're from 5 years ago that still bothers you. I don't have any way of knowing that. So I encourage you to be your own best teacher because you know what your comfort levels are and you know where your agitation levels are. And then again, just emphasizing being kind to your body, okay? So the last thing I want to say about ahimsa is it actually goes back to a place in my life where I was not even a yoga teacher yet. This was a long time ago. I was on a team of writers. And a coworker, or a fellow writer in the room, he would remind us all the time never to say the word hate. And every time somebody might use the word hate, I hate this project, or I hate the weather today, or I hate rain, or whatever, he would always interject. He could be across the room and he would interject, don't say hate. Don't say hate. Don't say hate. And years of being around this, it probably didn't take very long, but the whole team stopped using that word. And we worked together so well as a team. And I think nowadays, maybe there are certain words that really have this weight to them. And I think hate is one of them. I don't even say it naturally now because I do not use that word, because we don't need more of that, right? Words become things, and we don't need to put that out there in this world. I personally feel the same thing goes for swearing in a yoga class. It is violent language to some people. Some people don't grow up around a lot of swearing, right? So what might be the comfort level for a yoga teacher might be very uncomfortable for a student or two, right? Even if it's uncomfortable for one student, I still think yoga teachers need to be respectful of that. And they really need to represent the concept that's number one in the yoga philosophy on how you treat yourself and how you treat others, nonviolence, right? You can get very attached to that, and then you're not attached to your practice. Okay, so I think a lot of teachers really need to come home to that, right? Unless they agree with their student base, this is the way I teach, right? If your students will all agree to that, but I just think that's something that yoga teachers need to be very aware of, all right? So I want to end with a beautiful saying, may all beings be happy and free. And may your thoughts, words, and actions in your life contribute to the happiness and freedom for all others. I hope that some of the suggestions and comments here landed well with you. I understand that not all of them will land perfectly, but I want to hear from you. So if you want to share your comments, or suggestions for episodes down the road, please reach out to me. My email is Becca, B-E-C-C-A, at bluemoon.yoga. Thank you for listening. Namaste. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti Om.